Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
'Tis the season for a new holiday classic, and this week's episode is brought to you by The Man Who Invented Christmas. For your consideration in all categories, including Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor. The Chicago Sun-Times calls Christopher Plummer's performance as Scrooge sensational, and the Washington Post raves, Dan Stevens inhabits the character of Charles Dickens beautifully. Learn more about the movie and these performances at BleecherStreetGuilds.com. So welcome to the Bart Fleming podcast. I'm Peter Bart.
Mike Fleming.
And this is the time of year, of course, Mike, when the 10 best lists appear, which to me is always a study in confusion and pedantry as well, because the critics always feel that they must find some movies that most of us have never heard of and honor those. Like, I know it's A.O. Scott of the New York Times, Tony Scott, he listed A Quiet Passion as one of his 10 best, which is a biopic about a 19th century poet, Emily Dickinson. Did you see that one? I missed A Quiet Passion.
No, it seems like an appropriate title.
Manola Dargis, on her 10 best list is Ex Libris, a documentary about the New York Public Library. Missed that as well. So if you read the 10 best lists as a guide of what movies to see, you're going to be definitely confused. Tony Scott again says The Florida Project is the best of the year, and I don't think the Globes heaped much recognition on that. My favorite nomination of the Globes is Get Out, which they list as a comedy, and I don't think the director, Jordan Peele, who's a comic in a way, I don't think he got listed for anything.
Yeah, they didn't give him he got ignored for best director and best screenplay. But his lead actor, Daniel Kaluuya, did get a nomination. I mean, right now it's so hard to say. The race is pretty wide open, and we've now pretty much gotten an opportunity to see the last two big movies, or two of the last big movies, with The Post and Phantom Thread, and then the other ones to present themselves. Would be The Greatest Showman, which got a nomination, a Best Picture nomination by the Golden Globes, and All the Money in the World, which Ridley Scott managed to whip together in time to show the Hollywood foreign press voters right before their deadline. And that movie got three nominations, including Best Director and a nomination for Christopher Plummer, who before last month didn't even know he was going to be in the movie.
Well, the most nominations, of course, were accumulated by The Shape of Water, which is an enigmatic picture. I didn't love it, but it's certainly a fine bit of filmmaking.
Oh, I totally disagree with you. I think that movie was spectacularly imaginative storytelling, and he put a lot on the screen for a reasonable budget. I think Guillermo del Toro has always been one of those guys where you see flourishes of genius, and you know, and we certainly saw it in the movie Pan's Labyrinth. And I think that he put it all together in this film. So I think you have to seriously consider this one for Best Picture.
Well, despite the pressure to include more racially themed pictures, it's interesting to me that Mudbound has really not gotten the attention it deserves as yet. And a picture you liked a lot, Wind River, I don't think is getting the recognition. I wonder whether part of that is, again, escape from the grasp of Harvey Weinstein that you've written and talked about. But I think that that picture deserves more acclaim than it's getting.
Yeah, I really did too. I was very moved when I saw it at its Cannes premiere, where Taylor Taylor Sheridan for his directing debut won Best Director in the Uncertain Regard category. But no, the movie has, well, it also came out during the summer and it played really well. It was one of the highest grossing prestige movies of the year, behind The Big Sick, which, by the way, also got ignored by the Golden Globes. But it's hard for a movie like that to make noise. And all you can do if you're them is to just hope that that the Oscar voters keep it in mind.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, to me, again, someone who should be kept in mind is this amazing little person called Sally Hawkins. I mean, when you think of the again, in The Shape of Water and in Marty, the two roles that she played are so idiosyncratic, so uniquely different, that I think she should just get an Oscar or a Globe or whatever just for originality.
Well, she was certainly a revelation in The Shape of Water, and it was kind of gutsy, to put not a big star in a movie like that, and basically surround her with some terrific actors like Richard Jenkins and Michael Shannon and then there were several others. And so, I think it all came together really well. So basically what we have here, and I should add the Disaster Artist in the mix here, which also got a nomination for Best Picture in the Musical or Comedy category. I saw that movie the other day, and I must say I'm kind of obsessed with James Franco's performance as this director, Tommy Wiseau. I mean, talk about throwing yourself into a character completely. I mean, this was a real commitment. And I think that James could surprise us in this race. Certainly, I think he could be a surprise. I really do. And then you have the big movies. You have, The Post and Dunkirk. And I would put Phantom Thread in that category, since it's Paul Thomas Anderson and Daniel Day-Lewis. How do you think those will factor in the awards conversation?
Well, to go back to Franco, what I think is unique about him is that when you think of the genre of his work, I mean, here's a guy who started off with about Freaks and Geeks on television. And then, of course, there's one Franco path, which is with Seth Rogen with Pineapple Express and The Interview, your favorite North Korean picture. And then the other Franco path, which is As I Lay Dying and Bukowski and all these art pictures that no one went to see, including Franco's parents. But he has, when you think of it, he has had the most wonderfully eccentric and career of any, and he's not even 40 yet. He's still a young guy. There's nobody else like Franco.
No, there isn't. And, he mixes it up pretty good, but I thought he was wonderful in 127 Hours. And that was a movie that was just such a hard sell to watch a guy basically pinned, a mountain climber just basically pinned and dying. I mean, but boy, that was another tremendous commitment, character commitment. And I agree with you. I think he's going to, he's always interesting. He's never dull. He always brings something to the table. But I think in this case, The Disaster Artist is just, I wish he could do a sequel. I love that character. I just love that character.
Well, as much as you and I both liked The Post, I think that we agreed possibly on one fallacy in the plot, and that is the way Daniel Ellsberg is sort of marginalized. I mean, here's this amazing guy who, because he stole the Pentagon Papers, basically, and released it to the media, could have faced more than 100 years in jail under the Espionage Act. And I remember
and I've been carping to you on this for some time. There's a terrific documentary about him, and that was the only, and the documentary stuck in my head when I at first mentioned this to you. And I think Daniel Ellsberg is the definition of a hero. I mean, unlike Snowden, you know, he didn't take a powder after he leaked his documents. He basically, when accused of doing it, he raised his hand and he said, yes, I did it. And then basically when they said, well, you're going to go to prison. And he said, if I have to go to prison to stop an unjust war, I'll go to prison. And so to me, yeah, I thought that he basically served as a prop in the Post. And I understand storytellers have to make choices. And the narrative choice they made was to talk about Kay Graham through Meryl Streep's, emergence as a leader in which, you know, she basically took over the paper. It was a man's world, and she stepped up and made hard decisions. And then Ben Bradley, who obviously is a storied journalist. But I did feel that, that Ellsberg, who, you know, even, I mean, look at all the things that happened to him after, you know, after this happened. He basically had his psychiatrist's office was burgled by the Watergate crew. And if it hadn't been for Watergate, he probably would have been behind bars. And so, yes, I know you have to make choices in a movie like that, but I would have liked to have seen Ellsberg get a little more, you know, his dilemma be factored in as more of the picture. But it was a great movie, The Post. Don't get me wrong. I think it was, as a journalist, it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy, doesn't it?
It does. And I spent some time talking to this weekend with the CEO of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, and his feeling about award season is interesting because on the one hand, needless to say, as the owner of the Washington Post, and as a person who sort of reinvented the paper, creating it in such an extraordinary digital force in addition to the print paper, I mean, he loves the fact that the Post is really the star of this movie. On the other hand, Amazon has had a tough time in the award season, and his picture, The Big Sick, which was, I think, Amazon's best picture, which has grossed almost $60 million, but it can't get that much attention so far in award season, which is a shame, because I think it's a very unique and interesting picture. So Bezos is conflicted. He is the happiest man
in
town,
wonder,
but also the troubled.
Yeah, I wonder how. Do you really think that awards are that important to the Amazon game plan? I mean, I suppose all you can do is keep trying. I know, for instance, Jason Rappel, who basically, took the reins of the film operation over there after the shakeups they had. He made a very big buy the deadline broke in getting the film Life Itself by Dan Fogelman, you know, who created This Is Us, which is the breakout network series on NBC, just about the one of the few breakout series to come along that has been as successful as it has been on a major network, and they spent $10 million for U.S. rights to this movie, and they managed to get it, even though two studios were in the finals and bidding about the same money.
Mike, I think that awards are important to Netflix and Amazon because they're sort of new players in town, and I think they'd like to prove to the talent that involved in their pictures that even though the Netflix and Amazon have different reasons to make pictures than say Fox or Disney, that still if you're a filmmaker or you're a star of one of their films, you can get recognized just as importantly as if you were working for a major studio.
Well, but I guess the question is, how great of a business strategy is that? And Manchester by the Sea, for instance, was right there, and Casey Affleck won the Best Actor Oscar, and that was their big acquisition out of the Sundance Film Festival a couple years ago, and The Big Sick was also a Sundance acquisition. But I wonder if that movie made a lot of money, because they certainly spent a lot of money campaigning for the Oscar, and I don't know. You wonder if Amazon wants to play in, do they want to go after the tentpoles? Are they content to basically run a prestige film shingle? It'll be very interesting to see how all that shakes out and how Amazon continues to develop under Rappel.
Yeah, absolutely. This week's episode is also brought to you by Breathe, for your consideration in all categories, including Best Actor, Andrew Garfield. Rolling Stone calls Andrew Garfield's turn a fierce, fully committed performance and a loving tribute to a courageous man. Learn more about this remarkable story and Andrew Garfield's performance at BleecherStreetGills.com. So to switch topics here, again, if you look at Time magazine's cover, The Silence Breakers, it reminds us that as reports of harassment keeps growing, there's also growing frustration about what to do about it. I mean, it's one thing to say you're against it, but one intriguing example of the sense of frustration is the announcement of the Academy of Motion Pictures in adopting a new code of conduct to punish offenders, those people who offend the accepted moral standards. But this raises the question, can an organization whose purpose is to reward people, can it also end up punishing people? I know John Bailey, the president of the Academy, who himself is a cinematographer, he said to me that this organization cannot be an inquisitorial court. I think he's got a point. How do you feel about a code of conduct?
Well, it does make it hard to take seriously when Roman Polanski, who actually pled guilty to statutory rape back in, you know, this was a long time ago, but he fled the country and he did not serve his time, and he's an Academy member, is he not?
He is.
How do you take this seriously?
But once again, Roman Polanski is now, I think, 83 years old, and he is still making pictures. I know him. He's a good daddy and is a very happily married guy. What point would be proved by expelling a geriatric filmmaker from the Academy whose the crimes which he acknowledged, and he did do some time, as you remember, I mean, those are, four decades ago. So I think, once again, did he do those things? Yeah. But what would be proved by expelling him?
Well, you make some great points. And so I think the answer is, but here's the rub. So you're going to basically keep him in, even though that happened a long time ago. And what he did was as bad as anything that we've read about in the past several months, in my view. And so you're going to kick people out who have not pled guilty or even been tried in a criminal court, just based on some article that ran and then a subsequent, I apologize if I offended anybody. I just think that it's perhaps something that was an unnecessary can of worms for the Academy to step into. I mean, they mean well, just as they meant well when they varied the voting, the Academy voters to try and create a little bit of a chance for diversity in their awards. And I thought that was those moves they made were smart. But this one, I don't see how you, just as you said, that Bailey told you, I don't see how basically you attach sentences, because most of this stuff is rumored. It's he said, she said. And where do you draw the line?
Well, I think also that the whole nature of the dialogue between filmmakers and actors is so unique in the entertainment business. I mean, I've been present at intensely personal discussions where a director and an actress, for example, negotiate the logistics of a love scene. I mean, where will the camera trespass? How much intimate detail will be shown? I mean, the whole, even in the casting process, actors, filmmakers, their conversations, their relationships grow out of trust. It's not like hiring an auditor. So I think that given the nature of that trust that is intrinsic to the filmmaking business, it's hard to impose rigid codes which are more easily applicable to other forms of business.
Well, look, you know, this this sexual harassment thing, this whole movement is happening in real time. And I think that a lot of this stuff is just going to have to sort itself, and mistakes will be made. But it seems to me that I'm not sure we're at the point where you can institutionalize policies, especially when they're basically based on accusations that have not been tried in a criminal court. That was always the standard, as you recall. But now, even like, let's say in the case of Nate Parker, now Nate acquitted in a criminal court, and yet I haven't seen his name come up in terms of getting a big plum job, and that's so basically he's been convicted in the court of public perception, and the media court. So this whole thing is just so difficult to navigate, and and there is this white hot torch bearing crusade out there that, you know, that wants people ended. I'm not sure the Academy should have done what it did right now, because like we've talked about, who do you kick out of the Academy?
You make a good point. So I think we may agree on a lot of those issues, but I think the important thing on this podcast is that you and I disagree on most of the pictures that we see. I think that's a traditional that yes. we should sustain, because I think you basically are a kind-hearted person, and you go into movies wanting to like them. And I guess I do too. But, you know, spending 20 years of my life at a studio, I find when I go into a movie, within 15 minutes, I'm already analyzing what it could have been or should have done better. I also start always worrying about, how's this movie going to end? I mean, have they painted themselves into a corner? And even on the post, I'm not sure I liked the way it ended. It seems to me that to end on the personal triumph of Meryl Streep would have been more interesting than then to cut back to more political affairs. But that's my problem, right?
Well, yeah. And, you know, did I mention how much I liked Phantom Thread, which supposedly is going to be Daniel Day-Lewis's final performance? I can't remember laughing at a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, but I was amused by that film. I thought it was a clever little wry, dark comedy.
You see, I didn't, and I must confess, I didn't get it at all. But we agreed on The Disaster Artist, so I think anything involving disaster is something that you and I can always get in sync on, Mike. And on that,
sure.
And on that note, talk to you next week.
It's a deal. Thank you.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.